Now I would like to introduce our main speaker this evening, Lisa Oh.
And I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Lisa.
Okay, I was born in New Jersey at a very young age. That's where I'm starting. And I do have to qualify this by saying I have a tiny bit of a bad memory. I don't know if it's age or some of the things I did on my path, but I might end up telling your story. I might leave some stuff out, and I know I'm unique just like everyone else in the room, so I know that God's in charge, so let's start teaching this stuff. Alright, so I got to learn a lot since I did come here. I did want to thank the people who asked me here and trusted me to come and do this. Thank you, Bob, wherever you are, and Larry, Randy, and people that trust me. It feels really good to be trusted. Because I want to know me, and I'll tell you what I remember of my story. And if I leave any, like if I go starting to tell you something and then I trail off and forget, come see me afterward, I'll fill you in on it. So, like I said, born in New Jersey at a very young age, and what happened in my family is we have four girls, my father and my mother. And they tried for years to have a boy, and now there are four of us, they gave up. So I always grew up wanting to be a boy because I knew that I would be in favor of my father, mostly. And my mother was an alcoholic when I was born. We lived with my grandmother, and she was okay then. And when I was five, we moved 100 miles south because my father was a school teacher and got a different job. And my mother went to pieces. And she didn't have any of her support groups. She was very lonely. She couldn't cope in the community where we lived. And my mother's turned to alcohol and then turned to medicine. And they gave her, it was in the 60s, and they gave her lots and lots and lots of drugs. So my mother was always under the influence of something when I was young. And when she was awake, watch out. So it wasn't pleasant when my mom was awake, and we lived in fear of my mother, and there was a lot of craziness in my house. I'll just throw out a story or two. Once she tried to kill me, that's kind of an old story now. She came downstairs with the dog on the leash. Now the dog was our surrogate son. He was the only boy. And that was my father's anniversary present. He was the light of my father's life. And my mother came down. My father wasn't home, and she had the dog on the leash, and this was extremely unusual for my mother to be going somewhere, especially with the dog. And I was terrified. I didn't know how to talk to my mother, and my sister said, "Where are you going?" Well, that never occurred to me to say, "Where are you going?" And my mother said, "Off to kill the dog." And I was okay, and I didn't want to say a word because I knew whatever I said would not be the right word, and my sister said, "What for?" And my mother said, "You get back at your father." So, I don't know why I'm telling you this story. I asked God ahead of time, "What should I say?" And he didn't answer me, so I'm just talking. maybe he did answer me and I didn't hear it. So my sister says, "Take the dog upstairs and I'll try to get Dad." I guess he was in church. That's ironic. My father's sitting in the choir. And, my bedroom door didn't lock, so I took the dog and myself and locked us in the bathroom, and I knew that I had to protect the dog. That was my mission in life at that moment, but I had to protect the dog. If something happened to that dog, I was going to be hurt by my father. I mean, it would have been my job to protect him. We locked ourselves in the bathroom, and he cowered in the shower, and my mom came up the stairs, and she had, no, first she just banged on the door. "Let me in, let me in." And I was eight years old, I think. I was terrified. I couldn't let her in because she would kill the dog and I would be in trouble. And she went away and she came back and she had something. I found out later it was a hammer. And she's hammering on the bathroom door. And finally, I was so terrified. "Okay, Mom, I'll open the door." I couldn't get the door open. She'd broken it. And finally, after that, my father came and put her in the bed. And my sister, there's four of us. This was the second sister, got me out of the bathroom, fiddling with the door handle and the lock, and my father came, and guess what my father did? You can probably guess. He yelled at me, he yelled at my sister, he yelled at all of us, "What about this goddamn door?" And, you know, now I thought he would at least say thank you for saving the dog's life, but, so that was not That was probably one of the worst things in my childhood, but there was a lot of stuff like that. My mom was, we used to sit around with sisters and I and say, I hate that mother. I hate that mother. I hated my mother. And I hear that voice in my head still today. When something's bothering me, when one of you are bothering me or my children are bothering me, I hear that voice saying, I hate that. And then put the, you know, fill in the blank with whoever it is. And it's taken a great deal of work to change that tape that goes on in my head. So what happened, my mom was suicidal. She tried to kill herself 5 times, and sometimes it wasn't pretty. And she was hospitalized many times in my youth. She ruined her kidney. She was hospitalized a long time. My sister's now farmed out to people in the community. And my father had a lot of debt because he was a school teacher, couldn't afford 4 children and a home and a mortgage. And one day he came home and said, let's move. Sell the house and move. He thought it would be a financial good idea, but it turned out not to be, and we moved away. Again, not too far from where we live, but when you're a kid, it doesn't matter if you move across town. You're in a different school, you have different friends. So that's when I went off the path of being, I was a good student. That was where I found my solace was in books. And I was a voracious reader. I always have been, and now I'm a writer. And at the time, I escaped into books. And so I was really smart. I knew a lot, you know, because I read a lot of books. So I was smart, I was good on tests, I was good in school, but I'd always get bad grades because I couldn't behave in school. School was kind of boring to me. So we moved away, and I fell in with the bad kids. And we wanted to do all the bad things that bad kids do, and so we did vandalism and substance abuse and drinking. And I remember one of the first times that I drank was at my mother's 40th birthday. I think I was around 11. And I was the bartender. And I think that was when I took my first drink. I'm not certain, though, because this might be one of your memories that you told me. It's like that, you know? I don't remember what I do today, so if I remember something, I text myself, and I have this little message in my phone, so I text myself, I put the phone down, I go, beep. Oh, look, I got a text. It's scary. It's not even that I'm kidding myself. I'm like, we're just sitting. Started that fire. And it was actually just pointed out to me this year that the post-traumatic stress disorder that I have is not only from the tragedy of the fire, but it's also from the tragedy of people thinking that I was the one who did it.
Yep.
That there was more trauma involved in that than there was in being a fire victim. And so I worked, you know, I had guilt for years. You know, what could I have done? You know, what should I have done? I was a bad kid. I was a bad kid. You know, you didn't want me hanging out with your children. You know, you didn't want me in your house. I would steal what you had. I would take it. It was mine anyway. You were just holding on to it for me. That's how I thought. I thought the world owed me everything. I thought, you know, if I didn't have it, it was just, you know, circumstances. I could get it. You know, I was good at manipulating, lying, cheating, stealing, or so I thought. And I remember telling people when I was 14, I said, you know what? When I have the ways and the means, just hook me up to an IV bottle. Because I don't like this. I don't like being here. I don't like you. I don't like me. And I thought that would have been the way out. So what happened was I was awarded the state. I got put in a foster home. I ran away. I was awarded the state. And I found, first I was with an aunt and uncle, who to this day still think that I'm the criminal who murdered my aunt's sister, my mother. And, you know, they think I'm a murderer and an arsonist. And I'm like, how can I go through 36 years ago? How can I go through 36 years and live with that? And you think that the person that I am can do that? It's not just anybody in this room can set a fire. Anybody can. But the fact that they think I could live with myself if I did that, that's the part that gets me torn up. But God's in charge. So what happened was I found people who had the substances that I liked, and I hung out with those people. And I did that for a long time. I was awarded the state. I was institutionalized. I was in a state insane asylum in New Jersey. That was quite an adventure. I've been in psychiatric hospitals. I've had the privilege of going to jail. And I say the privilege because by the time, let me just fast forward. You guys know what it's like out there. And if you want to talk about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, I know this is going on the internet, so I'm not going to publicly confess to those crimes. There's quite a number of them. But I have been amends in many, many ways. There's a big amend that I, financial amend that somebody died, and my sponsor said, start saving. So I started saving. That was a big thing. We stole a lot of money. And what I remember is I got to a place where I would have killed you. If you had what I wanted, I would have killed you. I had this boyfriend, and long story short, we came to this place where he had my stuff. I knew he had my stuff, and he was lying. He said he didn't have it, and I said, I want it. I want it, and if I don't get it, I'm going to kill you, because I know you have it. And I went, and I got a knife, and I was going to kill him. You know, he had my stuff, and I knew he was lying to me. And when I finally did it, and I felt the effect of it, I said to myself, this has got to stop. I would kill somebody for this. I would kill and die for this. And you know how my life has changed today is that I have two children. I would kill and die for them. But I would not kill and die for a substance today. I just wouldn't. And so, you know, my life has really, really, really turned around. So it's 8:30, so I took our time. So, all right, so here I am, devastated. I got to go to jail. I can tell you that story, but I don't know if I will. I got to spend actually 3 weeks at Civil Grand in L.A. County. And it was a message from God. I went to my first rehab in 1987. And I got there in August 1987. And you see, I got 5 years, so I didn't make it that time. I've been to 4 rehabs. And I went to jail after that, and I knew when I was in jail, because I got out of detox, rehab, and I relapsed, and what happened was God said to me, look, if you want to stay on the path that you're on, go ahead. Go ahead. Because this is your life. You have free will. You have freedom of choice. Go ahead. But here's where you'll end up. You know, when I was in this jail with 200 women in my little dormitory at bunk beds, and they were fighting each other over the slightest provocation. They were saying things like, well, the last time I was here, it wasn't like this. And I'm thinking, you've been here before? You know, I'm like, this is enough for me. And then they had tattoos on their faces. And they were friends and they're fighting over, you know, who did this and who did that, and I'm like, this is crazy. And this woman that I met in there said, you know what, look around. Everybody in here is here for drugs or for a man. And I'm like, you know what, I'm here for both. So so I got out of there and I went back to the same place with the same people doing the same thing. And I'm like, I got to get out of here. I got to get some help. And I went back to New Jersey and I called up a friend of mine who I knew was on Telegram. He was always like, come on, let's go to a meeting. Let's go to a meeting. And so I called her up and I said, where's the meeting? And it turned out that I was in this rooming house. And the meeting was 10 minutes later in the building behind the rooming house. So that's how God worked in my life. I knew that God brought me through all the things that I had gone through so that I could get to a place where I knew that it wasn't going to work that way. I've been to four rehabs. Did I say that? Okay, I've been to four rehabs, and I got 3.5 years of sobriety each time. And after 3.5 years, I'm not certain it wasn't the same thing. Was it that I didn't work on certain issues? Was it circumstances? Was it because I'm an alcoholic and, you know, the substance works better when I'm under stress? You know, I was like, well, how do I deal with this? You know, so I got, since 1987, I've been sober longer than I've not been sober. When I went out, each time was like 6 weeks or, you know, couple days or whatever. It wasn't going to work. The last time that I used was, and I say use because I did use this time. I wasn't going to drink and I wasn't going to do any of those outside issues, and I had nitrous oxide from the whipped cream canister. If you don't know, you suck out the gas and you get high, and it lasts a little while, like 10 seconds. So I did that to get high. Stupid. We are, you know, it's insanity. It's insanity that precedes the first one. So I did that, and I did think it high, so I changed my sobriety date. But my last rehab was April 16, 2001. That was the last one. So what I, you know, what it's like now. So what happened was I was a mess. You know, I couldn't cope. I couldn't cope with life on life's terms. I couldn't cope with myself. I ended up getting married. I ended up having children. I was actually in the Navy. I joined the Navy after the first rehab when I had a year and a half or so things over, and I lied to get in. Don't put that on the So they give you a questionnaire, and every question on there was, did you ever, have you ever, are you? And I said, no. And the only no that was truthful was, are you a homosexual? And it's only because the opportunity is never right. I'm jumping around in my story. I know it's not in a linear fashion because I can't remember it in a linear fashion. I tried writing one of the stories of our childhood the other day, and I emailed it to my sister, and she wrote back, are you nuts? And you know, I'm like, I just want to hear your side of it, and her side of it included all the torture, you know, all the abuse. And I'm like, well, then what do you guys don't want to talk about it? You guys can remember the abuse. I can't remember it. I don't know if it was a lot of the substances that I took that wiped out my memory, or maybe early onset of Alzheimer's or what, but I don't remember a lot of the abuse, but I know it was there. So what I've done in my recovery has lasted since 1987. I've mostly been in recovery. I've had some slips and some using of some substances, but every time I knew, I had to get back here. I had to be with you guys, because you guys are my... You're everything to me. You're my sanity, you're my integrity, you're my trust, you're my love. You guys love me. You love me so I can love myself. You taught me how to love. You taught me what love is, you know, when you went and did, dropped everything and went to help somebody who needed help. That's what love is. You taught me what love is when I said, look at that, you know, look at the person over there, what they're doing, they're not doing it right. And you said, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You know, because I was so outwardly focused, I never did anything wrong. I was a victim. It was all your fault that I was here. And you guys taught me that, you know, come on around, take responsibility for yourself, and put God in charge, and everything is going to be all right. And it's like, I don't have to solve my problems today. I get to call people and ask for help. Like, tonight, we had a little dilemma before the meeting. I had a sponsor who's really wasted right now. And I have this blondie, he's sober right here in the front row. And I picked up the sober one, and I said, what should we do? Like, well, my sponsor told me to read out the big book before I got here. And the big book part that she told me to read said, trust God. Now, when on page 87, was it? Pause during the day when we're agitated. Or, you know, we ask God for the right thought or the right action. And God said, you know what? We don't need to pick her up because there's more craziness. We'll go get her after the meeting. So pray for us. We're going to go get her. Okay, recovery for me. When I first got it, you know, my first AA meeting was a big meeting like this in a hospital in Pomona, California. And it was a news guy from Channel 8 in LA, and everybody was all excited because, you know, celebrity. And I'm like, who's the news, you know, who's Channel 8? And I can remember some of the stuff he said. He said, you know, here's why we get a sponsor. He said, we get a sponsor because I have this computer brain. And I've programmed my brain all wrong. It doesn't work for me. I have a problem with somebody, and I run it through my computer brain, and it says, kill the son of a bitch. So I get a sponsor, and I have a sponsor who has the same exact problem. My sponsor, not today, my sponsor's really good, but my sponsor has programmed, this guy was talking to me, he said, his computer brain. He's programmed it all wrong for himself. It doesn't work for himself, but it works for me. So I call my sponsor and I say, what do I do? What do I do? And the sponsor says, call him up and tell him that you love him. You know, and that's what works today, you know? So I learned that in my first AA meeting, you know, and I remember some of the stuff he said, how he lived his whole life trying to accumulate and get more toys. You know, the one who has the most toys wins when they die, you know. Just craziness and how he always felt out of place, and I know I always felt out of place. I never belonged anywhere, and you know what? I belong here. I belong here. You guys love me. A large part of my story involves those outside issues, and I know I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I have alcoholic genes. I inherited them from my mother, my grandmother. Every female in my family has some problem. I ran by my sister one day. I said, you know what? The oldest one's a workaholic, the second one's an alcoholic, look at me, and you're a hypochondriac. And she said, I'm not a hypochondriac, I'm a sickly person. But we have our family, that's okay. Now, we've got them all crazy, this is getting worse. So what recovery means to me? Okay, here's... I have problems, I have situations. I was in a marriage that did not work. I actually married him during one of those relapses. And we did some horrible things before my daughter was born. And luckily, I didn't do them while I was pregnant. And my daughters are fine. But he was an alcoholic. And my sister said, well, you can't expect him to stop drinking. He married him and he was drinking. Said, you know what, I have an allergy to alcohol, and if I married you, and you were a carpenter, and I suddenly developed an allergy to wood, you'd have to choose. You'd have to choose between being a carpenter and being married to me. You'd have to choose, because wood would be deadly to me, and I'd have to not be around it. Even the sawdust would make me sick, you know, it would make me break out in jail or hives or whatever. So you have to choose. That's what love is. You would choose one or the other. And guess what she chooses? I'm divorced now, so that person. And I think my sister is mistaken about that, but you have to choose. So my sponsor, I have the best sponsor in the world. I had a funny track record with sponsors. I had a sponsor who we did all the whole steps together, and then she moved to Washington. And then I had another sponsor, and we did our steps together, and she moved to West Virginia, and so I had another sponsor. And we were going to do our steps together, and I had this phone call, and this is how you guys are. I had this phone call, and this woman is, I don't even know who the woman is. She says, I'm here with your sponsor in the hospital. She's had a heart attack, and she wanted me to call you and let you know that she won't be able to go through the steps with you. Anyway, she's lying in the hospital bed thinking about me. Okay, guys, where am I going? So, recovery. Recovery, the steps mean to me, the first step is that my life is unmanageable and I'm powerless over the things that I try to put in my body to make myself feel better. And that was very easy for me to see. Very easy for me to see. I was in Yale or an institution or I was a mess. And I had nothing, nobody who cared about me. And the second step for me is coming to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity and over time, you know, because I have read Bill's story over and over, and at first I'm like, I am nothing like this man. Nothing like this man. And the more I read it, the more I say to myself, you know what, I'm exactly like this man. We're both in the service. I don't think I ever sold any stock, but I did steal some. So I'm like Bill in that I had to come to believe in a car. I knew there was, you know, just like Bill said, you can see, you can look outside, you can see the water table and how the water works, and you can see how the food chain works, and you can see how even the fact that computers work, and the order and science and the way the atoms revolve around, you know, the electrons revolve around the nuclei. I mean, there has to be order in there. There has to be creative design. Creative intelligence, and someone said to me, well, does it have to be a deity? Why couldn't God be a scientist? And I said, well, maybe you both. So I never thought that God cared about me, just like Bill, you know? And Bill said, show yourself, God. And I don't know if I've had an earth-shattering spiritual experience, but I remember when I was in that rooming house and I went over there and I sat in that chair and that meeting, that to me was a spiritual experience. You know, when I sit and I go, my kids were in kindergarten, and, you know, I'd been in recovery most of her life, and my daughter in kindergarten got an award for love. You know, that was a spiritual experience to me, because if I had been doing the things I was doing before, there's no way that my kid would have gotten an award for love. Just like if you saw me in kindergarten, I wouldn't have gotten an award for love. And, so there is a God, and I'm going to call it God, because that's what Bill Morrison too in the steps, and he starts out calling it higher power, but he ends up with God, and that's what I did. I knew there was a power here. Somebody told me in the beginning, a power greater than myself is you and me. You know, you and me are greater than me. And I was like, I like that. I like that. That works, you know, because by myself, all I could do was make a mess of things. And when you gave me suggestions and I followed them, things got better. So the third step, turning my will and my life over, making a decision. I get to make that decision all the time. You know, before I came up here, I was asking God to direct our word and thought. Okay. Some of it, you know, comes around. So after I got divorced, and the divorce was kind of ugly, my ex blamed everything on me, and I was willing to accept half of it. I wasn't willing to accept all the blame or all the problems, and I knew most of it was his fault, but I know he had some of it. And all of it. And he got pretty snarly, and he never did get sober, and he left the country and went back to his native country, and he's still not sober. The few times I've talked to him, he's managed to ask me for money. And I'm talking about me, I said, no. You guys helped me that, too. You know, when he asked me for money, my head went, I could probably help him out. I got a few extra dollars. And I'm like, that's insanity. That's insanity. That's another gift that you've given me, is that I can see my insanity when I'm in it now. I think I'm going to progress, hopefully, to a place where I don't have to get in it so often. But I can see it, you know. I know, here's what I do at my house. I got this clean traumatic thing from when I was young, because if the house wasn't clean, my mom had a reason to rage. So we had to clean. And so cleaning was really important. And so today sometimes, I guess when it's hungry and lonely or tired, I get a little stressed out about my house not being all the way clean, and I start raging, and I figured out why. Not only is there that thing from the past and that inherited rage from my mother, when I get angry, my adrenaline starts going. When my adrenaline starts going, my heart starts pumping more blood. And when my heart starts, I have energy. You know, it's like fight or flight. I have energy. So when I get angry that my house is mad, I have the energy to clean it. So you guys told me that I can analyze these things. And I can find what works, and I can discard what doesn't work. And so it was not working to have my children cowering in fear because I'm angry at the house and everything. So I got to say, you know what? I can get energy other ways, healthy ways. I don't have to get angry and yell at people in order to get the house clean. I'm the one who does it anyway. So anyway, you guys teach me so much. I get to do a number of inventories. And it's funny because there's layers of inventories. I get to do, actually my ex-husband took one of my inventories and filed it in our divorce papers.
Oh.
So if you're interested in the whole thing, I think it's on Monday. Fortunately, I had a really good lawyer who said, well, the judge never gave me that shit anyway. Alright, so, I love these spiritual principles. The spiritual principles, you know, I get to listen to people that talk about spiritual things, and, Wayne Dyer says there's a spiritual solution to every problem, and he takes it down and he says, the reason that there's a spiritual solution to every problem is that every problem is spiritual in nature. And if I learn enough from you, I've learned that my relationship with you is based on my relationship with God. Okay? And the way I treat you, it says it in the other big book. It says that, you know, as you did for the least of these, so you did for me. And so I know, this is what you taught me. When I am mad at my dog, and I yell and kick the dog, I don't want to hurt him, but I shove him aside. I'm being bad to me when I do that. You know, it's kind of like paradoxical and it's twisted. Like, what do you mean you're being mad to you? Because if I saw you doing that, if I saw you kicking your dog, I'd be like, why are you so mean? Why are you doing that? And I wouldn't like that part about you. And so if I'm doing it, then I don't like that part about me. You know, and you guys taught me that the way I have self-esteem is to do esteemable acts. And I never even considered that when I was out there, you know. The way I have self-esteem is to get enough so you don't have to worry about it. And it was never enough. You guys know that. It was never enough, and it never ended. And there was a lot of horrible things to get. So in my life today, I get to accomplish things. I went back to school, and I got my, I actually have a bachelor's from 1982. The only reason why I have a bachelor's from 1982 is I was an orphan, and I was awarded the state, and they were giving me Social Security money because I was an orphan. And so I learned when I was 18, I was a high school dropout, but I learned that I would still continue to get this money if I went to college. So I said, okay, I'll go to college. And that's why I have a bachelor's degree, because they gave me, you could get a bachelor's degree. So, but now I've gone back to school twice, and I got my alcohol and other drug studies associate's degree, and I also went and I got a master's in counseling this past year. And that, you know, I did both of those things, and I got all A's. And I'm not bragging, I'm just saying that when I was 1982, when I got that bachelor's, I had maybe a C- average, maybe. You know, because it didn't matter to me. It wasn't work that I wanted to do for me. C- came easy to me. C- came to me when I didn't do anything. Because that's, and I'm good at academics. There's a lot of things I'm not good at, but I'm good at academics. I'm good at taking tests. I'm good at writing papers. And, but this time I got to apply myself. You know, I got to do what's required of me, and I got to do the research, and I got to hand in the papers, and I got to write, and I got to learn stuff. And I got all A's as a master's student, you know. And I, you know, it was really cool. God made it possible for that to happen. And God had given me two lovely children, and, you know, when I was going through the first few years with them and with my ex, who wouldn't stop drinking and me in and out, and I did not want to be a single mom. I did not want to have to do it by myself. I have an inherent laziness about me that I don't know if it's because I'm the third born, but, you know, if something needs to be done, I'm going to sit around and wait and see if someone else is going to do it first. You know, because if somebody else does it first, then I don't have to do it. But, you know, now that I'm running a household, I got to do it. You know, and you guys taught me that I can ask for help, that I can say when I'm wrong. There's a lot of times when I'm wrong. In my childhood, my parents never, ever, not ever apologized to anybody for anything. And I bet there's a lot of people in this room that had parents like that. And today, when I make mistakes with my children, you know, they get to tell me that. They get to tell me it, Mom. My youngest one's favorite phrase now is, Mom, you're escalating. You know what would happen if I would have said that to my mother? I wouldn't be here talking to you. So it gets to come around. So there's so much joy in my life today. I get to look, you know, and see people going through stuff. I get to see people walk through things. I get to find gratitude in the strangest things. Because my parents died when I was young, other people came in, and I had a whole mess. I'm sure I had at least 6 adopted mothers, you know, and they love me because they want to, not because they have to. You know, the people that are my family, some of them turn their backs on me. You know, that's their own disease at play. But other people have stepped in. God has put other people in my life, and they're wonderful. You know, most of the people in my life are people in recovery. I have a couple neighbors in there. And I've come across people in my daily walk who aren't, but most all my friends are in recovery. One of my sisters is in recovery. We're waiting for the other two to come before they physically hurt themselves or they're abusing something. And I have a great sponsor. I have a home group. And I've had a number of commitments in this. I get to write for a newspaper. I write for a monthly newspaper. It's a recovery newspaper, and I write a monthly article, and there are some background public comments. It's also online, but I'm not going to say the name. But it says, first line, and then the press release video from itself. Okay, so what else does recovery mean to me? Recovery means to me that I have all the promises have come true for me. You know, fear of economic insecurity has left me. There's some times when it sneaks back in, and I can see, like, if you're spilling hot chocolate on my carpet, I get mad. And then I get to dissect that. Why am I mad because you're spilling hot chocolate on my carpet? Okay, the cleanliness thing, that freak rage thing from my mom. And then there's, you know, bottom line, a new carpet is going to cost me money. You know, that's the bottom line. That's the fear under all this, is that I'm going to have to spend money. It's like, when I get to rationalize it, when I say rationally, wait a minute. Go ahead and spill the hot chocolate. Your feelings are more important. The way I treat you is more important than any stupid hot chocolate on the rug. You know, the way that I'm raising you when I'm talking about my children is more important than the stupid hot chocolate. You know, I get to rationally make decisions. I get to rationally make choices today. I have choices all the time of how I'm going to do. Just come in here. Am I going to bring my wasted sponsee here tonight, or am I going to go get her after the meeting? You know, I think it might be better for her to go get her after when we can devote time and love to her. My kids have stuff at school. You know, and there's other things I'd rather be doing. To be quite honest, I would rather be anyplace else than a room full of 11-year-olds. But you know what? That's what I'm here for. I sometimes say, am I the servant? Or it's like a servant? And you know what? I am the servant. I get to serve them with love. I get to be their parent. I get to teach them what love is by loving them. You know, and part of the thing about loving them, and you guys taught me this, okay, I did not learn this in my dysfunctional home. You guys taught me is that I suit up and I show up for my kids. And I get to teach my kids things like, you know what? Lies only make things worse. You know, so if say something gets broken, say if you're playing with something of mine and it gets broken, or if you're playing with something of yours and it gets broken, please come tell me. Don't hide it under the bed and hope nobody finds out. You know, because then you're going to have, you know, trying to cover up the crime, and then you're going to have all this, nobody trusts you, and then you're going to have all these problems. And so most of the time, when my kids make a mistake, they're able to stand up and say, I made a mistake. You know, this is a huge, huge gift. I made a mistake a few years ago. In sobriety, I went over to Burlington Pro Factory, and I tried on these sunglasses, and I really liked them. And somehow the old demon took hold of me, and I walked out of there with those sunglasses. And I had it, I looked really good in those sunglasses. And it took me a few days before I'm like, hello, you stole the sunglasses. You stole them, and you're wearing them looking like you're all that. And I had to take, I actually stole them when I had my kids with me. I often have my kids with me as a single mom, and I took my kids over to Burlington Coat Factory, and I said, I need to talk to the manager. And she said, what do you want? And I said, I stole these glasses. And she said, you mean you forgot to pay for them? And I said, she's giving me an out here, isn't she? Come on, God, don't make it so hard. I said, no, I stole these sunglasses. And she said, you mean you left them in the bag and nobody checked them out as you went through the register? And I'm like, would you please listen to me? I stole these sunglasses, okay? And she said, okay, you know. And she takes me in the back office with her boss, and she says, you know, I could call the police right now, and I'd be taken to jail. And I'm like, God, I asked you to protect me through this. And she said, but I won't. And she let me pay for them, and she let me walk out of there with them. And my kids got to see what an honest person does. Okay, I wasn't honest stealing them. I made mistakes stealing them. You know, I should not have done that. And I was able to tell the kids, I did the wrong thing. I made a mistake, and thank God, I told her. The manager said she was going to call the police, but I think she was all trying to scare me. And I was scared. If she had called the police, guess what would have happened to my kids? They take them to the children's center, and they're innocent. They didn't do anything wrong, and I get to know that today. I get to know that their lives depend on how I behave. You know, and this, it wasn't like that before. You know, parenthood changed me. I don't know about you, but parenthood didn't change my parents. They parented us in their selfish, dysfunctional way, you know, but parenting sober is awesome because I get to see the other women in this fellowship. And I get to look at examples of what not to do. There's a lot of them. And I get to look at examples of how to handle things. And there's this one woman in my home group who I have on speed dial because she successfully raised three girls, a large number of girls. And they're in college and doing well. They're not in jail. They're not using. They're not, you know, doing bad things like we did or like I did. I can't learn your stuff. I'd like to learn some of your stuff. Oh, how come nobody told me? It's like 2 minutes in line. Somebody wrap this up. I had an awesome life today. And you know what? I know that. And I know why I have an awesome life today is because you guys gave it to me. And there is a God that absolutely is with me all the time. Sometimes I forget. And sometimes I get into old stuff. But I know it's there. And when I think rationally about it, I know I can tap into that power that God gives me. And use it to help me and to help you especially. And I have trust in my life. I have friends in my life. I have, I have like 300 phone numbers in my phone. And any one of them, I can call and say, can you come? It's 2 a.m. and I need you. Can you come? And they would say yes. You know, they love me and I love them because they can call me at 2 a.m. and they can say, can you come? And I would say yes. You know, and that's a big deal. I just have anybody when I walk in here. And just being grateful for all the stuff, waking up and seeing birds, you know, hearing birds sing, and you know, having my own home and having my own car that runs. When we drive down the street, I'm like, we got a car that runs, you know. Awesome. I get to change my thinking and be happy about stuff, so how come you guys are just letting me talk? Shelly, can you sit up? Okay. All right, so thank you. So if there's some stuff I started talking about and I'm about to wrap up, come ask me, call me up, and I'm just going to sit in the phone and be like, no. Okay, so thank you everybody, thank you, Lindsay.